This is all implicit terror, and it's used to psychologically suppress dissent in the United States. And that is what the Phoenix program is all about. It's this ideal of psychologically affecting people.
You're listening to The Corbett Report.
Welcome, friends. James Corbett here, CorbettReport.com, in a conversation that's being recorded on the 26th of January, 2017. And you might remember that I had a conversation about 8 months ago with Michael Krieger of LibertyBlitzkrieg.com about Eric Prince, the founder of Blackwater, who is forgotten but not gone. He has reemerged in recent years with some shady shenanigans going on with a brand new group that he's created, or new company that he's associated with dealings in China and elsewhere. At that time, we were talking about how Eric Prince is apparently, or was at that time, under federal investigation, but still managing to do deals in various ways with various government entities. Very strange story. Well, that story only got stranger in the last several months when Eric Prince became associated, well, came up from wherever he had submerged himself into, and has started becoming a commentator on things like Breitbart News, where he is a regular guest on Sirius XM, and he has become associated with the Trump campaign. Now, this is particularly disturbing because last June he was on Sirius XM talking to Steve Bannon, of course now Trump's chief of staff, who was discussing a three-point plan for taking out the Islamic State. Point number two being a renewed Phoenix program, like what was used in Vietnam.
A Phoenix-like program. Okay, remember the Phoenix program was a root canal done.
You mean Phoenix? This is the Phoenix program. This is the Phoenix. Hang on. This is the Phoenix program in Vietnam.
It was a vicious but very effective kill capture program in Vietnam that destroyed the Viet Cong as a military force. That's what needs to be done to the funders of Islamic terror, and that would be even the wealthy radical Islamist billionaires funding it from the Middle East and any of the other illicit activities they're in.
Now, maybe you don't know why this is so disturbing, but in order to understand why it is so disturbing that someone who is now closely associated with the Trump campaign is talking about renewing the Phoenix program to grapple with the Islamic State that the United States helped to found and fund, well, let's talk to someone who knows about this subject, the man who literally wrote the book on the Phoenix program. I am talking about Douglas Valentine, who will be familiar to my audience as a previous guest on this program. Doug Valentine, thank you so much for joining us today.
You're very welcome. I hope I can shed some light on this, although Eric Prince is not somebody that I've studied in depth. I'm familiar with the world of mercenaries, and I can talk about that and the Phoenix program.
Well, Eric Prince is quite a character and apparently likes to think of himself as the heir to Wild Bill Donovan and a mercenary in that of that ilk and that sort. But I think today we're going to concentrate on why his comments are so disturbing in the context of this Trump administration that has talked about renewing torture and other sorts of practices like that. Well, that's quite relevant to the Phoenix program. And again, why this is popping up in the news is because there's just a brand new article from The Intercept. Notorious mercenary Eric Prince is advising Trump from the shadows. He is not officially involved with the Trump administration. Trump is more sensible than that, but he is unofficially involved, according to multiple inside sources with the Trump administration now, formerly the Trump transition team. So, to set the table for people, let's look at the Phoenix program. And for people who don't know, you have this passage in your book. Under Phoenix, as it was called by, or Phuong Hang, as it was called by the Vietnamese, due process was totally non-existent. South Vietnamese civilians whose names appeared on blacklists could be kidnapped, tortured, detained for 2 years without trial, or even murdered, simply on the word of an anonymous informer. At its height, Phoenix managers imposed quotas of 1,800 neutralizations per month on the people running the program in the field, opening up the program to abuses by corrupt security officers, policemen, politicians, and racketeers, all of whom extorted innocent civilians, as well as VCI. All right, so we are talking about a a very elaborate campaign that had a lot of working and moving parts, which is why you wrote a 400-plus page book on it. But for people who have never heard of the Phoenix Program, let's just give them the broad overview of what was being done in Vietnam.
Assuming that your audience has some familiarity with the Vietnam War, the United States pretty much established a Catholic regime there around 1955. The country had been, Vietnam was one state, and in 1954-55, the major powers divided it in two, to a North Vietnam and a South Vietnam. And at the time, a lot of Catholics left the North, over a million, and relocated to the South. And the CIA arranged for a Catholic named Ngo Dinh Diem to become president. And this fellow, Diem, used the Catholics who had come from the North to pretty much staff out a bureaucracy that in his administration that supported his regime. And everybody else was considered an enemy, and he was very much concerned with his political security, and he used the military and the security services, which the CIA formed. The United States actually built up his military, the Republic of Vietnam Armed Forces, through a military assistance advisory group. And while the U.S. military built up his army and navy and air force, the CIA built up his police and security services. This is what the CIA does around the world. And it's very important for your audience to understand that the CIA has what's called liaison relationships with security forces in almost every country in the world. And in a nation like South Vietnam or Iraq or Afghanistan, which the United States is actually creating and placing in administrative systems and legal systems and civil systems, Chamber of Commerce, all those kinds of civil institutions. When the United States moves into a country and starts building it up, nation building, the CIA has this secret function of financing and organizing that nation's security systems. And that's what the CIA did in South Vietnam. The situation got out of hand in 1963. The Buddhists had enough of a small minority of Catholics lording it over them and putting them in jail and using the security systems to oppress them, and they bumped off Diem. The CIA went along with it because it realized the only way it could maintain some control of the situation was to start liberalizing, if you will, the administration. And within a year, the United States military moved into South Vietnam. It actually, the United States started sending American soldiers to South Vietnam. And the insurgency had gotten so strong and so powerful, and so many people had joined up with the communists, that the only way to stem the tide was to send American soldiers there. So first it was 150,000 by 1966. There was close to 400,000, pushing up to 500,000 American soldiers. Behind the scenes, the CIA realized it couldn't win this war because the communists had more support among the general population. Most people in South Vietnam supported the communists and their values and their ideals and their vision for the future, because the CIA and the Americans had been associated for so long with their oppressors, with the first the Catholics and then later the military dictators that the United States put in place in order to affect American policies, as opposed to the policies that the people themselves wanted, which were policies that were represented by the communists. This is important. South Vietnam's a good showcase because this happens all around the world. Happened in Iraq. Happened in Africa, it's happening in Afghanistan, it happened in dozens of South American countries, it's happening in African countries, where the United States affects and imposes its policies through the systems, the administrative and security and military systems that it's able to impose on those countries under cover of doing good and bringing democracy to these countries. And this was happening in South Vietnam in 1966, but the CIA realized this war was never going to end because the people, the actual people, supported the communists. So the CIA, the Johnson administration had a advisor named Robert Comer, which it put in charge of what was called pacifying the South Vietnamese citizenry. Comer was a former CIA officer. He had been doing this around the world. He knew how to do it. And he and the head of the CIA station in Saigon, a guy named John Hart, decided to create what was called a general staff for pacification. This would not be military operations directed against the Viet Cong guerrillas or the North Vietnamese army. This would be highly sophisticated, complex operations against the people, the citizens of South Vietnam, and in particular, those citizens who formed what was called a secret government, those citizens who were secretly in the National Liberation Front. These are not soldiers. These are women, a woman who heads a woman's liberation group, or a teacher who heads a teaching association, or a guy who's a part of a farmers association. And these associations were secret and undercover, but they represented the values and interests and desires of the South Vietnamese people. But because they were civilian organizations, the military couldn't target them. It became the job of the CIA to go after this, what was called infrastructure. And then this guy, Comer, on behalf of Lyndon Johnson, with the station chief, called for a particular individual at the Saigon station, a guy named Nelson Brickham, who was a graduate magna cum laude from Yale, was considered an organizational genius. The CIA doesn't just have spies and soldiers. It has anthropologists, it has sociologists, it has doctors, it has lawyers, all of whom represent the cream of the American crop. I mean, these are the Bill, you know, just what Bill Gates is to the internet, these CIA people are to the systems that the CIA manages and imposes in countries where it operates. And they asked this guy, Brickham, who I interviewed at length, and all my interviews with him are up on the internet at a website called Crypticome. I recorded them. William Colby arranged for me to interview this guy, and I interviewed Brickham at length. And Brickham was tasked with organizing this general staff for pacification, which in 1967 became the Phoenix Program. Okay, so it's not just simply a program like Eric Prince advertises it as assassinating people that the government wants to build, bump off. It's a broad, incredibly wide-ranging methodology for bringing together all the systems in a particular country and targeting them against the civilian population to make them do a particular thing. And in this case, under what became known as the Phoenix Program, Brigham brought together all the police, intelligence, military, and civic programs in South Vietnam that were under American management. They put them all together. They got representatives from each of these agencies, each of these naval intelligence, military intelligence, police, the secret police, State Department, 25 different organizations, brought them all together in Saigon in the Phoenix Directorate, which was established in the summer of 1967, and charged them with using every means available to convince the citizens of South Vietnam not to support the insurgency, but to support the government of Vietnam. And at the center of it was the idea that terrorizing the people is the best way to get them to do this. And at every level of South Vietnamese society, a Phoenix Intelligence and Operations Coordinating Center was established, working out of this Phoenix Directorate. The whole program was super secret for its first 2 years. So a Phoenix Center was set up in every region, every province. The provinces in South Vietnam, there were 44 of them, were like states in the United States. So every province got an intelligence operations coordinating center, and every district, which is like a county in the United States. And the CIA set up one of these coordinating mechanisms all across South Vietnam. It brought together the most important parts were the CIA parts, which could operate clandestinely under cover of generally of doing good deeds, but in particular with the police and the security services, because a counterinsurgency and counter subversion is essentially a police function, just like in the United States. Okay, the military here is not called out to put down dissent, except in emergency situations where the governor calls in the National Guard or something like that. Those military forces were available through the Phoenix program, and they were used liberally in places like My Lai, where in order to go after members of this, these secret members of the insurgency, the Phoenix program would, the police officials and the CIA officers who were running these intelligence centers would call in, they could call in artillery strikes. They could call in planes to bomb a village. And they could call in infantry units to cordon off a village and go in and search it for insurgents. And this is exactly what happened in My Lai. And there were thousands of these kind of massacres all across South Vietnam in the name of wiping out the infrastructure, the secret government of civilians. And in the process of waging these paramilitary and military operations in the name of political control, hundreds of thousands of innocent people were killed. I mean, it's the same thing that you see in Iraq, the same thing you see in Afghanistan. They want to shape the political environment in those countries. And like in the name of wiping out the terrorists or the enemy leaders, they get a free hand to do anything and everything. But at the center of it were CIA operations conducted with the secret police, and the South Vietnam secret police. Those, and there were two main programs that the CIA based the Phoenix program on. The first was a archipelago of secret interrogation centers, which the CIA started creating in 1965. I did an interview with the guy who set this program up, and that's like with Rickham. That interview is available online also at Cryptochrome. It's also a transcript of it in my new book, The CIA as Organized Crime, if you want to read how they do that. And in every one of these provinces in South Vietnam, 44 provinces, starting in 1965, the CIA built. They hired a contractor, Pacific Architects and Engineers, to create a design. And then they PA&E would contract out to local Vietnamese construction companies. And they built a secret interrogation center in every province. They were called PICs, Province Interrogation Centers. And they were, once one of these was built, it was handed over to the special police, which was sort of like the RFBI. And that organization was completely funded by the United States. Its entire budget came from the United States. And all of its members were trained by the United States. And they staffed these PICs. And every time they focused entirely on civilians, on bringing in civilians for interrogation so that they could find out who the members of this shadow government were. They would work them over. They were virtually torture chambers. and they're the model for the black sites that the CIA constructed around the world and which Trump wants to revive, along with the torture methods that were systematized in these interrogation centers. And the other part, the other sort of foundation stone, was the CIA's counterterror teams, which it also started instituting across South Vietnam in the same period of time, in the early 1960s. They ended up calling them provincial reconnaissance units, and one of them was set up in every province. And just like the interrogation centers, was actually under the control of a CIA officer, although they pushed the secret police people out in front and said that they're the ones that are running the program. And these counterterror teams were created to do unto the Viet Cong, theoretically, what the Viet Cong were doing. They engaged in psychological warfare, which meant that they would secretly go into a village at night, which was thought to be under communist control, and they would kill whoever the civilians were who were involved with the insurgency in that village, and stick their heads on a stake, or disembowel them, or do something horrible and terror to them, in order to convince the civilians in that village and in the surrounding village that they should not support the insurgency. And so in every village, district, province in South Vietnam, the Phoenix program went to work based on these interrogation torture centers, secret police like FBI operations that had vast informant networks. And you were told if you didn't inform for the government, you were considered a sympathizer of the insurgency. So not only were people oppressed by what's called explicit terror, they were coerced through implicit terror. If you don't support the government, then we consider you an enemy. It's this kind of George Bush, Donald Trump, either you're with us or against us. And this had a tremendous psychological impact on people in South Vietnam. I mean, it was a civil war to begin with, but as soon as Phoenix kicked in, the whole society started to unravel. And of course, that's what the CIA wants. It's not there. They had this huge psychological warfare aspect to the Phoenix program in which they built it when it finally went public in 1969 as protecting the people from terrorism. But this is, you know, Orwellian language. It was, you know, I mean, the CIA conducts all its secret operations under cover of what's called civic action. We're gonna help you. We're gonna build a dispensary for you. We're gonna send in the white helmets in Syria. We're gonna do this. We're gonna do that. And it's all gonna help you. And in the meantime, it's actually spying on you, coercing you, targeting you for either recruitment or to get you to be an informant. And if you don't, then you become an enemy and you get killed or you get sent one of these torture chambers. What happened in South Vietnam was that the spirit of the people actually won out in the end. I mean, the South Vietnamese were indomitable, and they resisted. Hundreds of thousands of them were imprisoned and murdered and killed, but they held strong, and they eventually won. But the Phoenix program, and of course, the United States lost this war. And it was a very ignoble defeat. In 1975, the United States had to evacuate entirely from South Vietnam. And it did so. It was in disgrace. There were a lot of congressional hearings at the time that were attacking the CIA. And the CIA itself was being besieged. But the Phoenix program emerged from the South Vietnam from the Vietnam War as sort of the silver line. It had been so perfected there that it became a model for not just the CIA, but the military got with it, and Congress and all the other, the Department of Justice, our ruling political elite saw that this Phoenix methodology was the way the empire would police the world. And even though it hadn't worked in South Vietnam for a number of reasons that were specific to that culture, it's been perfected in the 40 years since then. And it was initially immediately applied by people who worked in the CIA officers in the Phoenix program in El Salvador and Nicaragua and Central America, where it was thought to be very successful. And people began writing, military people who worked in the Phoenix program, CIA people, all began writing papers about the future applicability of the Phoenix program. It's a system, a really broad system. And I quote this guy in my new book. It's sort of the, preface quote, guy named Gal Tong. And he's the one that said, personal violence in domination is the tool of the amateur. Professionals use social and political structures. And these systems, the system of a general staff for pacification, which was set up by this guy Nelson Brigham back in 1966-67, has become the systematized way of repressing dissent, not just in countries that the United States occupies. I mean, the Phoenix people ended up in Iraq. Phoenix people ended up in Afghanistan. They're spread all around the world. The CIA has applied this Phoenix intelligence operations and coordinating model. It's actually integrated in how it's actually itself structured. They created, the CIA back 2 years ago, created 10 of these Phoenix-type centers, which it now has spread around the world. And not only that, the Department of Homeland Security has set up what's called fusion centers here in the United States. Again, one in each state. Each state has a fusion center, just like each province in South Vietnam had a Phoenix Intelligence Operations and Coordinating Center. And these fusion centers operate exactly the way the Phoenix centers do. And as dissent builds, the spirit of dissent builds in the United States under the reactionary Trump regime, which is rolling back civil rights and really starting to upset a lot of people in a lot of ways. As we enter an era of dissent, these fusion centers will become the forefront in fighting dissent. And they're going to work the same way that the Phoenix centers did. And the scary thing about a guy like Eric Prince and calling for Phoenix operations directed against ISIS is that it doesn't just stop with ISIS. And what is ISIS? And if it proves somewhat effective there, and you have a system in place, what's to stop it from spreading like wildfire everywhere? And it's like the camel putting its nose in the tent, the old adage. Pretty soon the whole body was in, and Trump resurrecting torture, which also has an effect of implicit terror as well as explicit. With the militarization of the police forces in the United States, that again is implicit terror. Citizens of the United States know that all those guns can be used against them. They don't have to be used against them, but they see rocket launchers at Standing Rock. They're not using them against us right now, but there's a terror there that that they can be. And under a guy like Trump, they will be. The subtle hints that Trump is sending, this is all implicit terror. And it's used to psychologically suppress dissent in the United States. And that is what the Phoenix program is all about. It's this ideal of psychologically affecting people. And that's the biggest part of it. But the scary thing with a guy like Prince and him, you know, it's no mistake that he entered the news, and that the Trump administration allowed it to leak that he is, you know, advising them, and that he's looking forward to instituting this kind of a Phoenix program worldwide. One of the major systems of the Phoenix program are these private militias, which are ideologically aligned in the sense of being mercenaries operating domestically or internationally with the political the current political Trump administration. They have ties to the military, they have ties to the police, and in an emergency, the Department of Homeland Security can reach out to these people. So without understanding the broad sweep and scope of what the Phoenix program truly is, people could think, well, the government is doing this for our protection. But actually, unless you understand the psychological warfare part of it, the implicit terrorism part of it, how Phoenix coordinates systems across the board, for example, and then most particularly the Department of Justice, which under the Obama administration has gone to the point where dissent now is equalized with terrorism. American citizens can now be detained and put in interrogation centers under national directive, national
defense authorization.
Under executive orders that Obama put in place. Well, guess what, folks? You have no more right to due process. So this is the elaborate systemized form of repression that Eric Prince is signaling on behalf of the Trump administration when he starts talking about the institutionalization of a Phoenix program. And anybody who interprets it narrowly or any different than that is pulling the wool over your eyes. This is a massive first step in suppressing dissent in the United States. And that's the long explanation. And I'm a little out of breath, but I could go into an awful lot more detail. And if you want to know all the details, especially and most importantly, the role of the media in covering this all up, which is in terms of psychological warfare, is the most important ingredient, is the control of information, how your beliefs and your assumptions are shaped by the networks and the cable news and even a lot of people on the left who are either misinformed or disinforming you, or not telling you everything you need to know. It's your basic ideas and your assumptions about what's happening, which is the most important element in all of this. It's when you're being told these things are being done to protect you, you are being lied to, folks. And if you believe the hype, you're setting yourself up for a disaster.
Well, you do an admirable job of summarizing several hundred pages of heavily footnoted information. So there's so much to go through there, but I want to pick up on one of the themes and underline one of the themes that you brought out there, the Orwellian inversion of various terms and language. The foremost example being perhaps counterterrorism, which of course is just terrorism. We have to terrorize them because that's what they're doing to us, kind of thing. And you bring that out in, I think, an important sense that people might just try to reduce the Phoenix program to a body count, but that does not take into account the psychological warfare sense of this, as you point out. So, for example, in your book, you point out that the CTs, the counterterrorism teams, taught Manzione and his SEAL comrades the secrets of the Cywar campaign, which in practice meant exploiting the superstitions, myths, and religious beliefs of the Vietnamese. One technique was based on the Buddhist belief that a person cannot enter heaven unless his liver is intact. So Manzione would snatch an NVA courier off of Ho Chi Minh Trail or sneak into a VCI's hooch at night, crush the man's larynx, then use his dagger to remove the man's liver. Some of the CTs would actually devour their enemies' vital organs. You have a lot of grisly details about psychological warfare campaigns like that, and playing on beliefs in vampires, or painting the Eye of Horus on across from suspected collaborators and things like this. Tell us a little bit more about the psychological effects of a program like Phoenix and how that's important to its functioning.
Well, and it goes even deeper than that. There's a term that gets bandied around a lot today. It's called false flag. And at one time it had a very, it was this guy, Nelson Brickham, who was the systems guy that created Phoenix program, who introduced me to that term, false flag, 30 years ago. It's actually within the CIA was, pretty specific to a kind of recruitment, a false flag recruitment. But, and there was a, in a broader way, it's part of what is, what the CIA calls black propaganda, which you can equate with the term that another popular term, fake news. And in this regard, when the counter-terror teams were formed, in the early 1960s, one of the functions was to dress up like the enemy, dress up like the Viet Cong guerrillas, and go into a village that was actually in supporting the U.S. puppet regime. You know, these were people who were loyal to the ZM regime or whatever. To or whoever the United States had, in, you know, was backing in power at that time, a village which was loyal to him, sending a counterterror team into that village dressed up like the Viet Cong and conducting atrocities and blaming them on the Viet Cong. This actually, the fact that the CIA was doing this became public in 1965. A senator went to Vietnam and he was talking, it's in the book, the new book, this whole scandal that was conducted. And the senator went to Da Nang, which was a region, the center of a region in I Corps. And he asked this, he was asking the CIA officer up there the kind of programs that they ran. And the CIA officer, for some reason, said, well, we, as part of coward terror teams, sometimes we go into villages, you know, we dress up like the enemy and we do this. And the senator went back and he was like horrified. But the CIA response was to not allow its officers to brief senators anymore unless they you know, everything they said was carefully controlled. And they changed the name of the program from counterterror teams to provincial reconnaissance units. And they just continued to do the same thing. And they do it on a, they do this kind of black propaganda on a massive scale. It's not something that just happens with counterterror teams. It happens with false news reports that the CIA writes up and leaks to a newspaper in Ukraine, in Kiev, or Tokyo, or wherever the, you know, I mean, the CIA has a station in every country in the world. And when they want to control and manipulate political or social events in that country and generate support for American policies, which are unpopular in that particular country, they do the same thing. They simply create false news. And then they have newspapers in those countries, which they have established themselves in South Vietnam. The CIA ran and had set up the three major newspapers. It's set up the major TV and radio stations. It's done the same thing in Iraq. It's done the same thing in Afghanistan. It doesn't limit itself to these kind of lurid, explicit forms of terrorism. It is controlling everything that you think and believe and assume about foreign events through black propaganda. This is what it's really good at. Is using language and manipulating social and civic institutions to make you think that a situation is going on when it's actually the opposite. And so if you really, And this is one of the functions that a Phoenix Coordination Center oversees and manages, so that these black propaganda, fake news operations are done in support of the efforts to pacify civilian societies all around the world. And believe me, when I say to you, the same thing here is happening in the United States on a massive scale, especially anything that you read in a newspaper or see on TV that purports to be accurately describing events in a foreign nation. Well, that language, the wording that you're believing, that was written by the CIA, and almost especially anything that is repeated by the military or the State Department or any agency of the United States government, or any news report that's citing an official communique from the United States, all of those communiques, the CIA has edits them. It has at these Phoenix-style coordination centers, before an official statement is issued, the CIA and the FBI have to check it over to make sure that it's not revealing any secrets, or that it's sending the correct political message. And so, basically everything that you learn about the world is false, unless you actually go to those countries and have some capacity to either translate what the opposition is saying in those countries, or to some extent what RT is telling you about what's going on. And so there is, the facts are there, but you got to go out and seek them, and you got to get the other side of the story, and you got to listen to not just alternative news, but you have to make sure that the alternative news that you're listening to is not also CIA black propaganda, which, has so confused. I mean, it's obvious. Everybody is so confused nowadays as to are we living in the Trumpian alternative reality, or are these things actually happening, and is what's stated actually the policy, or is there something that's unstated that's actually the policy? Everybody is so confused that this has a profound psychological impact, and it's part of the psychological warfare that's being waged against the public, is to make everybody so confused that they have to rely on their gut feelings. And those gut feelings are also being manipulated. So it's a very bizarre Orwellian situation that we're in nowadays. And you got to kind of pick a facet of it that you want to become an expert in and knowledgeable of, because it's very hard to understand every part of it in its sweep and its scope. But it really takes a lot of thought and a lot of research and a lot of effort on the part of every individual to really try to weed through this and establish some kind of terra firma.
Right. You can stick. Well, let me back you up on that. Let me back you up, because I can attest, living in Japan, that every single story you've ever heard about the latest trend in Japan is mostly made up. There may be a tiny kernel of truth about it, but it's mostly just sensationalization. And that isn't even for any sort of black propaganda CIA purpose, I would assume. It's just the way the news media functions. So how much worse is it when it is in a politically sensitive country that the U.S. is at some level of warfare against? On that other note, let's also back up what you're saying about dressing up as the enemy. People might remember 2 years ago, it came out that the SAS was sending 120 troops to Syria to dress up as ISIS fighters. What could go wrong? I will direct people to a video that I did on that a couple of years ago when that story came out. And I also talk about the story that we found out in 2005 when British special forces, again, were dressing up as Arab terrorists in Basra and got arrested, and they had to be broken out by the British military, basically slamming their way in with tanks and destroying their buddies' police to get their the British Special Forces out. So this happens time and again. It is happening still right now, even as we speak. And anywhere on the chessboard where they need to move in with their Phoenix program, they can just say, hey, there were ISIS there, look.
Well, you know, my parting message would be, Phoenix isn't coming. Phoenix is here. And this, you know, leak or whatever you want to call it from Prince is fake news. It's simply meant to create, to make you afraid that these sorts of things are going to be happening. Well, believe me, it's already here. And if somebody wanted to, if the CIA or was getting political direction from Obama or Bush to stop ISIS, it would have happened a long time ago, folks. And the drones are in the sky, and they could have knocked off these people a long time ago. You're simply being fooled again. And the whole idea that the world, all our problems can be solved by identifying the correct enemies and killing them is a big major lie. It's the biggest lie that you've ever been confronted with, because most of the time those enemies are just doing our bidding anyway already. It's just the idea of setting you up, like putting you on a golf tee and setting you up to enable these sorts of systems, to support these kind of systems, this belief system that you can solve your problems by killing people. You know, that's not the answer. And you don't know which people they're going to be killing next. And once you say to them, okay, yeah, let's start killing all these people and torturing all those people, you're going to find your name on the blacklist too. And the whole idea is to resist this kind of thinking and these systems that are being put in place, and to understand them and their sweep and their scope, and not become fooled by all this rhetoric that's being bandied about, or to think that it's somehow reflecting the real world.
Yes, unfortunately, we're being plunged back into the world of the Islamic boogeyman, and we're going to be living with all of the consequences of that renewed narrative. Bush, too, perhaps? Anyway, you did mention, of course, your new book, The CIA is Organized Crime. I would be remiss in my duties if I did not plug it here. I will confirm on air what I told you off air. I have read The Phoenix Program. I have not yet read The CIA is Organized Crime. Tell us what myself and other listeners out there might be missing from not having read it yet.
It's the book itself is divided into four parts. The first part's about The Phoenix Program and how it became the model for the war on terror. The second part is the CIA's involvement in, and actually the management of, international drug trafficking, and how the CIA actually commandeered the DEA, and what that means for you. The third part is about the Phoenix program as being the model for the Department of Homeland Security, and connecting the war on terror with Homeland Security, and showing how they're actually different sides of the same coin, and how it's a mistake to think that what's going on over there is not going on over here. And then the fourth part is about the CIA's relationship with the media, which of course is the, like I said earlier, the major systematic method of domination. There was a guy I quote throughout the book, a guy named Guy Debord wrote a book called The Society of the Spectacle. And he said, secrecy dominates our world, especially as the secret of domination. You don't know. The biggest systems, the biggest and most important system that has been set up is the relationship between the security systems and the media. This is how secrecy is imposed upon you. they don't tell you everything. They don't even tell you anything you really need to know under the aegis of national security. Again, they're telling you that it's for your protection, like the Phoenix program was billed as protecting the people from terrorism. Well, they tell you it's for your protection that you can't know the truth about what your security services are doing. And the essential instrument is the media, which goes along with this, because at the highest level, the media and the CIA are the same people. And they are using secrecy and the control of information to dominate you. And that is the main tool, the main system in your domination, is the fact that they don't let you know what's going on. Guy Debord said this 50 years ago. It's not that secrecy dominates the world, especially as the secret of domination. Unless you go around and unless you can try to figure out how you're being dominated, you're never going to be free.
Well, some heady words to leave things on, and I am looking forward to reading the book. So when I do, I will be happy to have you back on the program to talk about it in more detail. Douglas Valentine, thank you. Oh, let's plug your website as well, douglasvalentine.com, where people can go for more details. Of course, that will be linked in the show notes for this conversation. Douglas Valentine, thank you for your time.
You're very welcome.
Now available from CorbettReport.com. The Data DVD, Volume 4. Every podcast, interview, episode, and article published on CorbettReport.com in 2011. All on 2 Data DVDs. For details or to buy other Corbett Report DVDs, please go to CorbettReport.com/shop.